Well, welcome to Public Affair Friday edition. And sitting here for the one and only ST is Yuri Rashkin. So we're substituting perhaps Russian accent for the Israeli accent. And in studio with me today, I'm honored to have Bill Leaders, Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council President. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And you're no stranger to these airwaves, but this has been a tough year for transparency in government, hasn't it?
Yes, it's been a very eventful year, much more eventful than I would have liked. In July, there was what I would describe as a full frontal attack on our open records law when the Joint Finance Committee inserted into the budget on the 4th of July weekend provisions that would just gut the law. As it pertained to the legislature in particular, but also to all state and local government agencies. It would have severely undermined the expectation of openness that we've had in Wisconsin for decades.
Of course, from their point of view, this, you know, there's always two sides to every story. And speaking with Representative Loudenbeck on this at, I think, Rock County 4-H Fair, she said, well, this is being done to protect the people that are sending us emails and they don't want to be, you know, I guess exposed or something like that.
Yeah, the idea that this was somehow meant to protect the privacy of people who contact their lawmakers is profoundly dishonest. What was proposed in the budget bill in July was a series of measures that went well beyond that particular issue. It would shut down access to the drafting files for legislation. It would shut off all communications between legislators and their staffs. Put into the law a statutory exemption for all communications that were about the creation of legislation. So when there's back and forth as a bill is coming into being or a law or a policy is coming into being, all of that would have been shut off for public access. And not just at the state level, but right down to the level of local school boards. And then when they got caught with their hands in the cookie jar, they came out with this extraordinarily dishonest spin that says, oh, we're just trying to protect the people who write us and share sensitive
right.
information. And, you know, they don't want their names coming up. Well, first of all, that's not what they were trying to do. Second of all, under existing law, if they have a good reason for withholding the name of someone who contacts them or personal information within a communication, if someone writes and says, hey, I'm writing about my autistic daughter, and by the way, my social security number is XYZ, they can redact that information. If they have a good reason for redacting it, a good public policy reason, they can redact it under current law. What they wanted to do is to give themselves the authority to withhold the names of people who contact them, whether or not they have a good reason or any reason at all. And what that would lead to is just the ability of people to contact lawmakers in secret. For lobbyists and people within interest groups and people with trying to pressure lawmakers to act in certain ways to protect those communications so that the public wouldn't know that those are going on. That would have been the consequence. And that would still be the consequence if they continue to try to push that through.
Now, transparency, accountability are important concepts on this program. I guess bringing her name again, I received an email from Representative Loudenbeck a couple of months ago, I think, letting me know that there was a Freedom of Information request on her office, made in her office. And so she was turning the information, and my email address might be in there as well. And I thought it was interesting because I've never received another, you know, I try to be in contact with my representatives and I've never received anything from other ones, who happen to be Democratic. And so I don't know if there was some kind of a, you know, if she was, you know, if there was a specific request that was any sort of strategy or this is just, you know, how
so she was notifying you that she may be releasing an email that contained your email address.
Right.
How bad do you feel about that? Is that something that would really bother you?
Well, is your
email address a secret? I mean, I could probably find it.
You know, ever since I was on Janesville City Council, I had a rule that I tried not to say anything that you're not comfortable seeing on the front page of Janesville Gazette. But, you know, I'm okay with that email getting to her, I guess, or being released, or I don't know. Should I?
I think you need to be. I think we cannot have the expectation that people can contact their lawmakers and tell them, you know, how they should act with regard to legislation and do it anonymously. That's not fair. That's not right. You have to have the courage of your convictions if you want to participate in the workings of government, unless there's some good reason for you to have confidentiality. And in those cases, as I said, you can have it. But just in general, when someone writes a letter to a lawmaker, they don't have that protection from accountability, or they don't have an anonymity, and neither should they.
Well, what about the politician-client privilege? Oh, wait, that's attorney-client. All
right. Yeah, don't give them ideas.
All right. So what happened after that? You know, the July meeting and...
Well, okay, so there were these provisions that were stuffed into the budget bill, and the backlash was extraordinary. Conservatives as well as liberals and some Republicans in the legislature as well as Democrats said, this is a terrible idea, it needs to come out, and so...
It was kind of a nice moment that way.
Yeah, it was. Within 2 days, on July 4th, midday, the governor and legislative leaders announced that they were going to pull these provisions from the budget. However... There was another provision that had been inserted into the budget earlier by the same committee, Joint Finance Committee, which took away some of the access that had existed in the law. This had to do with a narrow area. It had to do with the naming of finalists for University of Wisconsin positions. And that provision was not removed. And that provision was stuck into the budget at the last minute with minimal discussion. And that ended up becoming law. And so now into the future, the University of Wisconsin will operate under different rules from all other state agencies when it comes to naming finalists.
Is this all about like negotiating for the best basketball coach?
Well,
or?
Basketball coaches would be part of the category for which they will no longer have to disclose who else was considered. They'll just have to say, here's our new pick. This is who we've decided we want. Who else do
but
we consider?
Is there some advantage in negotiation if you don't have to release who the finalists are?
Well, they might say so, but you know, we've had a tradition where finalists for key positions, including coaching jobs, have been public in the past. I'm unaware that we haven't
That's kind of what you expect going in.
I'm unaware that we haven't been able to get good coaches for University of Wisconsin teams because of this, you know, this expectation that people be potentially identified when they're seriously considered. Furthermore, the idea of identifying finalists is in the public interest in another way. Do you really want it to be too late before the public can weigh in with concerns about potential nominees? In the ideal world, and this has happened in some situations, you announce finalists and you present them to the public and you give the public an opportunity to weigh in on the decision. They don't get to make the decision, but at least they should know who is being considered and maybe bring some information to the fore if it is relevant.
Now, is this something that UW wanted?
Absolutely. And so rather than do it honestly, rather than do it openly, rather than do it in the light of day, they just got a legislator to stick it into the budget bill and it got passed into law. Something similar happened with regard to another change which was made to our law. This was done in the campaign finance bill, which just passed a couple of months ago. Where at the last minute, without any discussion, there was an amendment added to the bill by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who is the person who pushed these changes in the budget that we've spoken about. And this change would remove the requirement that people who give significant sums to political campaigns reveal where they work. Right now, that information is required, and groups like Wisconsin Democracy Campaign use that to identify giving patterns, and they could say, oh, look at the rent-to-own industry. Look at how much people who work for the rent-to-own industry, officers and employees, have given to legislators over a given period, at the same period of time that the legislators may be considering changes in the law that affect that industry. It's also been used to identify illegal behavior when employers subject to donation limits funnel money through their employees. That was one way that you could find that misbehavior was occurring. So they just wiped that out. They stuffed it into the bill after it was originally proposed, and they passed it into law. So we lost that one too. Those are the two big losses of 2015.
The voice may sound different today. This is Yuri Rashkin sitting in for Esti Dinur, a public affairs guest today. This half hour is Bill Leaders, Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council president. And we're speaking the year that it's been in Wisconsin, especially for transparency in government. Bill, do you feel that there is opportunity? I mean, you're not an attorney as far as I know, but is this something that courts somewhere down the road may reverse?
No, I don't think so. I think the... legislature has acted. I think maybe down the line we will have a scandal that involves people abusing the freedom from accountability.
I don't think there's a if, it's just a matter of when, because
maybe
it's kind of being set up for
and
that.
The law can be changed back.
All right.
But it will take the legislature to do it. It will take a reversal of the law. The courts aren't going to step in and say, hey, you don't have the right to change the law, because they do. They can change the law. Maybe they shouldn't have, but they have that right.
All right, moving on after that. What else did you want to make sure to highlight that stood out for you in this glorious 2015?
Well, there was a couple of things that have happened this year that involve not changes to the law, but interpretations of existing law in ways that give people within government new power to withhold and even destroy records. One of them was that the Walker administration began claiming what they called a deliberative process exemption for materials that are produced while a bill is in the process of being created. So the back and forth that happens, say, between the governor's office and the Department of Administration, which is the agency that drafts the governor's version of the budget bill, they wanted to say all of that is off limits, that there's a deliberative process exemption. Well, there isn't. In the law, there's no such exemption. They just created this out of whole cloth and began asserting it. And it happened when people made requests for information of the back and forth that occurred over the changing or the removal of the language in the Wisconsin idea. They wanted to strike down
the language.
Yeah, about how, you know, the university had a mission to serve the public and the greater good and all that. They wanted to strike that language and take it out from the UW's mission statement. And that, of course, that blew up in their face too, and they had to back down on that. And then people wanted to say, well, where did this come from, and what was the discussion that went on internally over the inclusion of this language? And they came up with, oh, we don't have to tell you that. That's part of this deliberative process exemption, which we've decided to make up out of nothing and start asserting. So that case is now being litigated. The Center for Media and Democracy and the Progressive Magazine, where I work, have filed lawsuits against the state of Wisconsin for beginning to cite that interpretation and to create this exemption out of nothing for deliberative process materials, and that's playing out in the courts.
Now, just again, I'm not an attorney. I was talking about state court, because that,
yes,
if the guys, you know, how far can that go and how will that end?
Well, it can go
it
all
almost
the way
seems
to the
like
Wisconsin
we know.
Supreme Court, and probably the end will.
So just remember to vote in elections. We have a caller on the line. Margaret, welcome to the program. What is your question or comment for Bill?
Hi, it's wonderful to hear his voice and to have you inviting him on the program. Bill, I have a question that's partly stimulated by things that are happening here locally out in the townships of the state of Wisconsin, and has to do with how initiatives originate. It seems to me that Walker's regime gets it backwards, and it's part of the scheme for secrecy and total control or power over information. And that is that, you know, politics in progressive terms is for taxpayers to have needs and to voice those needs, and for those in elected office and their administrative appointees to follow the lead of what the taxpayers want and need.
Sure.
Is not the other way around.
Sure. You want legislation to come from the grassroots up. You want it to come from the people, from the needs that they express to the political structure. And maybe it does. In some cases it does. And that's what these records would show.
Go forward with that whole idea of the reversal of the original intent of governance, and I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you, Margaret. Bill, is this kind of going back to, you know, going to Alec a little bit, too, about legislation originating elsewhere and being brought to Wisconsin?
Well, yeah. Ultimately, the claiming of an exemption for the process of creating law or policy could be applied to camouflage the ultimate origin of certain kinds of legislation. And that's also what they apparently wanted to do when they said we want to shut down access to the bill drafting files, even after a bill is introduced, even after it becomes law. They want to just make that go away, that you can look in the drafting file and see, you know, who had input into the making of a bill. I think the caller is exactly right that the ideal process is when there's an organic and justifiable reason for making a change in law and policy, and you should be able to see what that is. And the only reason I can think of why you'd want secrecy is if you have no such origin that you're proud of, that the genesis of the change in law or policy is something that you don't want to become public. I think that's unfortunate. I think it's wrongheaded. And I also think it is making policy for the exceptional situation rather than the norm. By and large, most of the time, when you see what happens in the making of law and policy, it's not a bunch of crooks doing the wrong thing. It's a bunch of people who are doing the right thing. Most of the time, people in public office behave appropriately. And when you see records, you have that confirmed most of the time. And I think that needs to be preserved as part of our tradition, that you can see how legislation is created and be proud of it in some cases, and not have it shut down in secret and not know where it comes from.
Well, there's a certain spiral developing because you have people who distrust the government, and then they go in there and they create more secrecy, which creates more distrust, and it's a spiral.
And it could very easily erode. Our traditions of openness, which are strong in Wisconsin, could very easily erode rapidly.
Traditions are a wonderful thing, you know, but how powerful can they be if they have to be fought for? It's, you know, when we talk about balance, it's not that two sides are standing still, it's that both are pushing equally.
Yeah. Although we need to remember that there are allies for open government within government. And it's not a partisan thing. There are Republicans who stand for open government, Democrats and independents and nonpartisan public officials who respect our tradition of open government, and they realize that they benefit from it, that by conducting their business in the open, that they build trust with the people that they represent. And they're not all pushing back against this idea that we should have open government. Some of them are on the side of openness because they've seen that it works.
But do they then stand up and support those ideas, or
sometimes,
is it more of a kind of intellectual dishonesty, like, you know, I'm going to vote for this even though I don't support it?
Well, that's what Representative Lautenbeck did, is, you know, voted for these changes and then kind of said, oh, well, I don't really believe in them. I just had to vote for many for some strange reason. They all came up with that explanation after the fact. But no, there were Republicans like Senator Rob Coles said that he would not vote in favor of a budget that included these attacks on the open records law. And when he said that, you know, that was kind of a death knell. They're not going to get it through over the objections, the principled objections of key members of the Republican members of the state Senate. So that was a very powerful principled stand.
I think this conversation would not be complete without kind of seeing how Scott Walker plays into this, and his, because we're talking about 2015, his presidential aspirations and campaign. Do you feel that it had any effect how business in Madison was done while he was running versus when he announced that he was out of the race, or things in Madison went on regardless?
Yeah, I don't think it had much of a connection to his presidential thing because, you know, he was running as a candidate for president right when this all blew up in July, and it got very little national attention, this, you know, this full frontal attack on our open records law. It did not become part of the national dialogue, or it did not become associated with the governor, and maybe it shouldn't have. I mean, it wasn't.
Or that he was running as a conservative, obviously, and so he wanted to show the state and the things he was doing were super conservative to impress his, you know, national following.
I don't know. I don't know that the governor. Well, the governor did.
On the ground, you didn't notice that kind of an impact.
Well, you know, the governor had some input into these changes. His hands were not clean. His office was involved in the drafting of one of these provisions that that were put into the omnibus bill at the last minute, and that would have changed the law to allow that the materials that are created while you're creating law and policy be kept secret. He wanted that to happen. He still wants it to happen. They're still going to fight for that to happen. It's still a bad idea, and it is happening with the support of Governor Walker. So we do need to hold him accountable for that mindset, and we need to buck up against that mindset as it's coming from him and others in his administration.
What are your hopes and fears for 2016?
Well, my fear is that they're going to try to achieve some of the very things that they were prevented from doing. They're just going to do it through another process. They've talked about creating a legislative council committee, which is a group of people that you pull together to study an issue and then come up with a bunch of changes in the law that they want to introduce. That process, if it is invoked, would begin in 2016, in March or so. They would pick the committees, and then they do the work through the summer, and then they draft legislation, which in the fall, and that's introduced early in the next legislative session in 2017. So they could very well come back and get all of the goodies that they were prevented from getting, the deliberative process exemption, a change in law that allows them to shield who it is that contacts state lawmakers asking for have input on legislation. They could shove all that into this legislative council process and try to ram it through that way. I think that may very well happen.
You're right in your story that we're seeing in words and actions the beginning of a culture of contempt for the public's right to know, embedded deeply within state government. This should be of grave concern to every resident of Wisconsin as we prepare for future battles. Culture?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think for the first time, we are seeing that there are powerful people within state government who would like to pull the veil on what they do. I don't think that was something we saw very much of in the past. In isolated situations, yes, but not within positions of real power and influence. I think we've had a tradition of leaders within in Wisconsin that who have by and large respected our tradition of openness. They benefited from it. They found that there was virtue and merit in it. And now I think the tide is turning on that we've got people who are emerging who would just as soon close the door. And I think we all need to recognize that that's a disturbing development, a new development, and something that will require a concerted response on the part of the public to successfully resist.
Do you feel somewhat as a voice in the wilderness, or do you feel that there is support outside of Madison,
Milwaukee? No, I feel we have lots of allies.
All right.
We have lots of allies on this. It doesn't mean we're going to win, but I do think that, you know, a lot of people, conservative or liberal, Republican, Democrat, recognize that there's a virtue to government being done in the open and that there's a danger in allowing government to operate in the dark, and they will fight for that.
All right. Bill Leaders, it's an honor to have you here on the program. What would you like to kind of in conclusion to leave us with any kind of parting thoughts?
Well, you know, there's an issue that's going to come to the fore on Monday where there's one of these interpretations of law that's been embraced by people within the Walken administration. They've taken a new definition of what's called a transitory record, and they've applied it in a way to allow them to destroy certain records. And that decision to change the interpretation of the law is being revisited by the Wisconsin Public Records Board. So that will be happening. Watch for that on Monday. And hopefully the board will rescind its decision to revise the definition after having seen how quickly it was abused by people who want some reason, any reason, to begin destroying records.
Are they actually destroying records, or are they?
Apparently, yes. The two cases where we know it has come into play are in records of visitor logs, people who have come and visited the governor at his executive residence. A request was made for that information by a group, and they said, oh, well, we have some of them, but not all of them. We now consider these to be transitory records that we don't have to keep. We can destroy them at will. Look, the Public Records Board has this definition that allows us to do it. They also said the same thing when a newspaper requested text messages that were sent between state officials and one of these companies that came to the state hat in hand and walked off with $500,000 of state money without creating any jobs. Well, they said, well, we don't have those text messages. Those are transitory records. We don't have to keep them. We can destroy them at will. And so there was a blowback against the definition and the fact that the definition was changed without public input. And so that decision will be revisited on Monday, and hopefully they will not allow that language to stand.
All right. Well, we have a caller. So, Willie, you're on the air with Bill Leaders. What is your question or comment?
Hey, thanks. Glad to talk to Bill Leaders. Bill, do you think any of this could have happened in Wisconsin, the stuff that's happened in the last 6 years? Could this have happened if our airwaves were not heavily infested with hate radio voices like Charlie Sykes, Vicky McKenna, Mark Belling. You know, we really have very little commercial radio opposition to them and to Die Gebrüder Koch and the Walker regime.
Yeah, I guess I do think that it happens independent of that. I know that there is, you know, a full flowering of conservative voices that have come into play, and that some people, you know, object to that for various reasons. But I don't think that's what's driving this will to secrecy. I think this is an impulse that occurs to certain people within both parties and of all political persuasions. I think it is still a minority impulse within the Democratic and
second
within the Republican Party, but it's not coming from right-wing talk radio. It's coming from politicians' desire to protect their own interests.
Don't we somewhat defame a lot of conservatives like Angela Merkel, Mr. Thatcher of Britain, and others, by referring to people like these, the Koch brothers and others like that? When we refer to them as conservatives, aren't we abusing our language? Shouldn't we call these people, you know,
extremists,
fascists?
Well, I wouldn't. I mean, I wouldn't use that term, and I would say that.
You know, I would be only almost curious, and we are ready now to wrap it up, because this is, it's, I love when we have a caller just at the right time to allow us to do all the technical things that need to be done. But isn't fascism just a merging of private business, enterprise, and government?
What I would say is that I believe it is fully consistent with the ideals of conservatism, okay, that you support open government. A lot of conservative-oriented groups like the MacIver Institute make that a key part of their mission.
Well, sure. If you don't trust the government, you should keep an eye on it.
Absolutely. And I respect that impulse on the part of conservatives. I think that, you know, in that respect, there is bipartisan agreement that open government is good government.
All right. Well, Bill Leaders, Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council President, thank you so much for being on the program.
Sure.